Yata Hi Purusho Param Shirasha Gurum Udvahan Tam Kanhena Sadathe Tata Sarva Pratikriya Yatahi Purusho Param Shirsa Gurum Udvahan Tam Satskandena Sadhate Tata Sarva Pratikriya Yatahi Purusho Param Dasagurum Udvahan. A man may carry a burden on his head, and when he feels it to be too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulder. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another. Purport. This is a good description of an attempt to transfer a burden from one place to another. When one gets tired of keeping a burden on his head, he will place it on his shoulder. This does not mean that he has become freed from the strains of carrying the burden. Similarly, human society, in the name of civilization, is creating one kind of trouble to avoid another kind of trouble. In contemporary civilization, we see that there are many automobiles manufactured to carry us swiftly from one place to another. But at the same time, we have created other problems. We have to construct so many roads. And yet these roads are insufficient to cope with automobile congestion and traffic jams. There are also the problems of air pollution and fuel shortage. The conclusion is that the processes we manufacture to counteract or minimize our distresses do not actually put an end to our pains. It is all simply illusion. We simply place the burden from the head to the shoulder. The only real way we can minimize our problems is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give ourselves up to His protection. The Lord, being all-powerful, can make arrangements to mitigate our painful life and material existence. Whew, that's a good one. It's also a very good place to bring up one of Srila Prabhupada's most favorite examples, the ass, mudha. I don't know what you call in India, but we call in States a donkey, or in English they say an ass. This ass works from dark to dark, from the earliest morning before daylight until after dark at night, carrying this huge burden, sometimes as big as its own body. He carries this weight for a handful of dry grass. His master may give him one handful of dry grass, and his master will beat him if he doesn't carry this weight. And all the time he's carrying this giant weight on his back, he's hankering only for some sex life. And if you may have noted that sex life between asses, the opposite party will often kick, the sex of the opposite party will often give a kick to the face. So there he is dreaming of sex, despite being kicked by the opposite sex. And sometimes he sings Prabhupada used to use this example. Sometimes the ass sings poetry, what he thinks is poetry and philosophy, but it only disturbs others. I mean, grass is everywhere. The ass can eat grass any place. But because he is so full, he thinks that only because his master is giving him this handful of grass that he is so thankful. Okay, I'll carry this huge burden. Just give me one handful of grass. And yet none of this burden belongs to him. And what he thinks is pleasure is just a little reduction of the pain. His whole life is full of pain. And practically speaking, that is the situation of all people living in this material world. They are just like ass, living in this way, carrying these huge burdens, and thinking that relief from just a little pain is pleasure. And for the most part, these burdens that we all carry are self-created. It's not that from childhood everyone is given some burden, assigned some burden to carry. These are all self-created. I want this car, so I must have a job, or two, and I must save my money, I must do this, I must make so many arrangements. Like that, we create our own burdens. Many of the things that attract us to many of these burdens are caused by and are a result of the things that we hanker for and we lament if we do not have, such things as beauty, staying beautiful. Can you imagine? This whole world practically revolves around this principle of staying beautiful or becoming more beautiful and retaining beauty. For what purpose? For sex life. There's no other reason to want to stay beautiful. I want to attract the opposite sex. I want to attract my husband. I want to attract so many members of my society so that they will see that I'm having good sex life. All the billboards are for staying young, staying beautiful. Glorifying the body and the youth, glorifying youthful body. You don't see many old people posing for advertisements for beauty. All of our education is self-imposed. This gives us more and more burden. The more we learn, the more difficult it becomes to carry the burden of education. Just like Prabhupada gives us this example of the cars. This example could go on and on. It's a wonderful example. Once we have the object of our desire, which is a car, then we have to make so many monthly payments to keep this car. That means we have to work so hard and plan the rest of our life around this payment that comes due at the end of the month for this car. And we must make sure we have enough money, sufficient money for our gasoline, for our petrol. And then, of course, this car is going to break. So we have to be constantly repairing this car. And our attention must be burdened with the possibility of this car breaking at any moment. And then we have time considerations built around this car. Okay, it takes me 1.5 hours to get to work. I must leave at 7:30 to reach my office by 9 o'clock. So our life becomes even more burdened than by time constraints as a result of this car. We have to pay insurance on this car. Otherwise, something may happen. If I don't have insurance, then my car is lost completely. All my money and time and efforts have been lost if I don't have insurance. Or if I'm hurt in an accident with this car and I go to the hospital, all of the money I have created my whole life may have to go to paying the doctor bills if I don't have insurance. Or someone may steal this car at any time. I don't know, it's probably not so common in this country yet, but in the States, theft is a major problem, theft of your car. They say something like 1 in 10 cars gets stolen. You just have to consider that during your lifetime, your car will be stolen at least once. So, in fact, Prabhupada used to say that the people in this modern world have become increasingly more and more burdened by their so-called science and their so-called education. He said that the youth, especially of today, have more burden to bear than in previous generations because of the so-called progress of science. Science has given us nothing but one problem after another. Trying to patch this problem with that remedy creates two more problems going this way, and so on and so on. It's ballooned out to an extreme now that practically the world is heavily burdened with problems. Heavily burdened with problems. Many people, I have a personal memory of someone who was seeking wealth. In fact, he wasn't seeking so wealth so much as that wealth came to him. Just see the burden of wealth. This young boy, he was the third generation of a very famous oil billionaire. J. Paul Getty III is his name. There was J. Paul Getty II, his father, and the original J. Paul Getty, one of the richest billionaires in the world in his time. So this J. Paul Getty III, he was a friend of mine. I got to watch him firsthand how he lived with this burden of great wealth. Being born with everything, he had no inquisitiveness, only he consumed things as fast as he could. He consumed everything as fast as he could. He chewed through it because he had everything. His desire to understand what is real consumed him to such a degree that everything he was given he just destroyed by consumption. He looking for to get higher and higher, better and better, more and more pleasure, till finally he became totally addicted to pleasure-giving drugs, drugs that give a few moments of pleasure and then pain after. And at some point that reaches a dead end. Then there's no more drug higher that can get me pleasure. So he overdosed on some drug. And now he still has his chauffeur-driven limousine, and he still goes to parties almost every night in Los Angeles. He still wears the very best of all clothes. He still has girlfriends of great beauty putting their arms around him. But he is a living vegetable. His mind was so affected by this drug that he cannot speak. The only thing he can move is his little finger. He's totally paralyzed. He's just a vegetable. What a life, huh? J. Paul Getty III. So in this way, the materialists, they become puffed up by their false sense of becoming God. Remember what Bhavananda was saying a couple of days back in Prabhupada's purport to text 29. He says that because the living entity desires to imitate the Supreme Lord, he is covered by Maya. We cannot imitate the Lord, nor can we become the Supreme Enjoyer. This is not possible. And when we think it is, we become conditioned by Maya. Thus the encagement of the living entity under the clutches of Maya is brought about by forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord. So the materialists, try to become God, imitate God. And these deluded living beings increase their material strength by so many activities, so many activities. And in fact, eventually they become the burden of the earth. So much so, the earth becomes burdened with the miscreant and mudha, materialist activities, that it becomes a place that is nearly uninhabitable by sane people to see. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it said that Rama Krishna Viti Bhuvo Bhagavan Arhat Bhavam Bharam. Lord Balarama and Krishna advent themselves to remove the burden of the world. This world becomes so burdened, this material world becomes so burdened by impious activities that even sometimes Krishna has to come along with Lord Balaram just to remove the earth from its terrible pain, to remove this burden from the earth. The earth suffers. Just as now we see the earth suffering in so many ways that seas even have become polluted. There are no more fish left in the sea. The air has become unbreathable. To find water, you have to go to the market and buy in a bottle. And this is the good time. Wait till the future. So Krishna came at one point and removed the Yadu dynasty. They were, at that time, the great burden of the earth. He came himself and removed the Yadu dynasty. It's not that there is shortage, that the earth becomes increasingly short of resources. Prabhupada always said that, oh, the earth can support billions and billions and billions of more people. That's not the question. But the earth becomes poisoned. She becomes sickened. And Prabhupada said that this becomes an intolerable situation for the earth, that she must remove this painful situation. If the earth is burdened by millions and trillions of devotees, that's a great pleasure for the earth. In that she rejoices. So just as Krishna came to rid the earth of the miscreants, the Yadu dynasty, so Lord Chaitanya came also 500 years ago to lift the burden of humankind by teaching us this bhakti, this loving devotional service. He taught us that the head is a very, very heavy burden to carry around unless it is used for bowing down. When it is used for bowing down, it no longer becomes burden, right? This is bhakti yoga. So Lord Chaitanya also appeared when the earth is becoming filled up with burden, material burden and pain. Lord Chaitanya came to teach us this philosophy, this way of life. And Prabhupada says, now again, the earth is becoming under very painful condition. It's terribly burdened. And that Krishna has again appeared in his name and in this Hare Krishna movement to diminish the burden of the world. And no amount of man-made plans or devices can accomplish this. This has been proven over and over. There is no cure for all of this painful problem on the earth. You cannot invent some injection that will solve disease, it will solve the problem of disease. Only some new disease comes up. You cannot create any kind of machine that gives any sort of pleasure, lasting pleasure. There is simply no end to striving for pleasure. You become old, you become full of disease, and you die. There is no escape from this. So Krishna comes and he says, just surrender unto me and I shall deliver you from the burden of all sinful reactions. This is the end. This is the only way. Krishna comes and says this, I will personally deliver all of these burdens from you. You just surrender to me. Have you ever heard anyone else say that? Has any other machine or any other material manifestation ever made that promise? Of course they make that promise. You drink my drink and you'll be happy. But they can't say forever. They cannot say, you surrender to me and I will make you happy forever. In fact, this a person in the material world is just a dead body. He's just a dead body moving around in a bag of skin decorated by some hairs and nails. And inside this bag of skin there are bunches of dead flesh, we call muscles, and bundles of bones that are connected by other dead tissues. And there are pools of blood and stool and urine and bile, and the whole bag is full of polluted air. And it's enjoyed by germs and insects. So this body is simply dead already. It's already dead. Unless it is used for Krishna's enjoyment. Unless the owner of this body, me, use this dead body for Krishna's enjoyment. If I try to enjoy this body, it's like enjoying a dead person. So Krishna comes, and the sweetness of Radha and Krishna destroys all taste for material happiness. It replaces this dull taste for material happiness with this higher taste, this sweet, loving association with Radha and Krishna. All burdens are lifted. This sweetness alleviates the heavy burden of existence. And devotees become like these white clouds you see scooting across the sky, relieved of their burden of water. The fleecy clouds, that's like the devotee. So when we meet our spiritual master and become a little serious about this Krishna consciousness, I want to learn about this, what Krishna means when he says he will relieve all my burdens. And once we begin to understand this philosophy, and we surrender first to our spiritual master is so kind that he accepts the burden of our sinful lives. He accepts his disciples' sins and all of their subsequent sins. This is a very major responsibility. Once we have decided to become a disciple, we have to also decide that I will sin no more. My spiritual master has so kindly taken away my sinful burden. For me to continue creating burden for him is unthoughtful. So when we understand this Krishna conscious philosophy, then we also understand that our bodies, our educations, our wealth, all of these burdens to the materialist really do not belong to us. They belong to Krishna. I've surrendered them to Krishna. They belong to Krishna anyway. I've just woken up and realized that. I give them back. So if Krishna uses me for his enjoyment, where's the question of burden? I don't have any burden. So civilization without Krishna consciousness is a civilization of lower animals. Beasts of burden, like the ass, Buddha, and those who prey on beasts of burden, the predators. You can see, it's so easy to see. Society is lower animal life, beasts of burden and predators. And these material beasts, they increase their burdens of responsibility. Burden, getting more and more burden in life means because we accept more and more responsibility. When we have family, we have to accept that responsibility. That grows and we become responsible to society in certain ways. Many society, social things become a burden for us as we become more and more responsible. And ultimately we become responsible to our nation. This theoretical concept of nationhood. And these burdens are simply heaps upon heaps of more and more sin, types of sin. But the devotee feels responsible only for pleasing his spiritual master. This is his only responsibility. I don't have any other responsibility. I don't have a responsibility even to wife, to children, to family, to society, to nation. I don't have any responsibility for these things outside of Krishna. Only my responsibility is to Krishna. So when I accept these things, family, society, even nation, if I accept them for Krishna, there's no burden. Krishna neutralizes all sinful reactions for those who are preaching his glories. This is just a given. This is the highest secret. The highest secret. You don't want any more pain, no more anxiety. You want to stay high? Become Krishna conscious. Because Krishna accepts the sinful reactions and removes them, this burden from you. For all of those who preach his glories. Very simple formula. Preach Krishna's glories, become free. In the material world, there's cause and effect. Everything I do has an equal and opposite effect. Anything I want, I have to strive in such a way to get it. I have to cause that effect to happen. But everyone is trying to improve their bodily comforts. This is the main pursuit of materialists, to improve the bodily comfort. Cause something that will give the effect of relieving pain. But we cannot do this even one inch. We cannot relieve ourselves from pain and distress or anxiety even one inch, despite every effort we may make. It cannot happen. Cause and effect. Cause and effect. The body becomes the cause of all these things, the body and the mind, and they create karma with everything they do, with every action they take in the material platform. It creates karma, reaction, sinful reaction. But in devotional service, there's no such thing as cause and effect. Krishna is the cause, and Krishna is the effect. So my body, if it's used in Krishna, the proper understanding, if it's used as Krishna's tool, it doesn't have any, it causes nothing, there's no effect generated, there's no karma, and I carry no burden. I carry no burden. Now the devotee, of course, always tries to increase his burden. Increase his burden for serving Krishna. Materialists see the contrast. Materialist always tries to lighten his burden. Become comfortable. But it only gets heavier despite all of his attempts. It only gets heavier to the point where sickness invades his body and he dies. But the devotee, he wants more and more burden. Give me more. Give me more to do. Give me more service. And the more devotional service that's piled upon the devotee's shoulders, the lighter it gets. That's the great paradox. The lighter the service becomes. The more, the lighter. Srila Prabhupada is our best example of this. If you can just imagine back, even before he came to the West, even before, long before we met him, he was preparing. His spiritual master told him 30 some years before he began his voyage, back in the 1930s, he said to him, "You must go to the West and preach Krishna consciousness in the English language." But Prabhupada took that as his direct command, but he didn't immediately begin that. Although he began to prepare in some ways, the last 10 years before he came to America, say around the beginning of his 60s, he began to studiously prepare. He had no dream, no thought that he would ever succeed, but he took on this huge burden of learning all the Vedas, all the Shastras in Sanskrit, perfectly, perfectly Sanskrit. He learned the English language. He sat and dreamed this, his whole plan of Krishna consciousness, and took on this huge burden, not only of understanding everything in the Vedic scriptures, but understanding everything he would have to do to bring these to us in the West. Without any commotion, no one was helping him, no one was encouraging him. Only that thought of his spiritual master wanted this thing kept him going. And he accepted this burden I can't even conceive of such a burden. It's way beyond me. That he would just accept it, just surrender completely to Krishna and accept this task as his duty. But he always used to tell us that he never felt at any time that this was a difficulty, that there was any difficulty, that he knew that Krishna was taking care of everything, that Krishna had so lightened his burden that he felt absolutely no heaviness. So this spirit, the same spirit that Srila Prabhupada absorbed, the surrender to Krishna, came to us. It came to us in the early days in San Francisco, London. Srila Prabhupada came down and sat with us, and his example. I mean, we were all young boys and girls like yourselves for the most part. None of us had any money. None of us had any tools or facilities. But we had Srila Prabhupada, and his ecstasy, by being able to see and view his ecstasy all the time. Prabhupada was never out of a state of bliss, or he was never. You could never catch Prabhupada with his pants down. He was always in a state of bliss, always in a state of ecstasy. And we saw that and tried to understand it. And this ecstasy, we began to understand, is because everything he does is for Krishna. Ecstasy means lightness, lightness, freedom from burden, lightness, relief. Prabhupada used to tell us that the more we dance for Krishna, the lighter we would get, the more less weight we would have. We could jump higher and higher. The higher we jump for Krishna, the higher we'll be enabled to jump for Krishna. So we began to mimic this, probably. It wasn't understood by us in a rational way, but we began to mimic what Srila Prabhupada was telling us, that if we just did everything for Krishna, that we would be free from all anxieties. And so we did. And it was proven to us time and time and time again that whatever burden we took on ourselves, if it was for Krishna in devotional service, it made us feel good. We never felt the weight the constraint or the pain of any, that whatever I'm doing for Krishna is harmful or painful to me. Never. That can't happen. I'm all yours, Krishna. Here's my breath. Whatever I'm using of this breath in this body is for you. I chant your names. I glorify your names. I'm preaching to, using my breath to preach your glories. I'm using my breath to stay alive so that I can preach your glories. I'm using my senses, every one of my senses, so I can appreciate your glories, so I can transmit these to others. I'm using my eyes to see your spiritual your servant, my divine spiritual master. I'm using him. If I can't see him directly, I'm using photos. Even now I have in my screensaver pictures of Prabhupada coming up one after another, after another, after another, after another. Infinite. 8,500 photographs, thanks to Gaur Krishnadas. What an unlimited spiritual master. I'll bet there's not another spiritual master in the world that's got about 15,000 photographs of him. In every pose, every animation, every aspect of his divine personality there. 15,000 or more. Who knows? Maybe more. If you count the frames in a video, then there are hundreds of thousands of photos of Srila Prabhupada. No one else could say. So with my eyes I try to see Srila Prabhupada. See Krishna, come and see the deities, see how glorious they look. See the devotees. This is the main thing that keeps me in Bombay. Just so I can look around every day, all day, and see these wonderful devotees. This is such a great pleasure. Or even outside, seeing things outside, you always think, well, that billboard would make a nice advertisement for our upcoming Hare Krishna festival. This car, that's a nice car. We should get one like that so we can move around the city faster for serving Krishna. Like that, all of your visual senses can be employed in Krishna consciousness. Or even you can imagine in the forest or something, just seeing Krishna and wondering, and the beauty of nature. I like to go out in nature a lot. I'm kind of a country boy myself, because I see in unspoiled nature Krishna's hand so easily. The beauty of the trees and the birds. Wonderful birds. How could there be such a thing as a bird? So beautiful. And the way the water plays on trees and runs in streams. These are all manifestations of Krishna's beauty. So all of my senses, what I hear people talking about Krishna. Or even I hear devotees talking about business. That business has to do with Krishna. I'm listening to tapes. I'm listening to Mukunda Maharaj, my old friend. I just saw him in New Zealand. He's got a tape of one of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. Well, he changes it every so often, but he has it on a continuous loop, and he puts it on low volume and puts it under his pillow every night. So he sleeps with Prabhupada's lecture coming in his ears all night. I said, Mukunda, can you remember anything Prabhupada said in the lecture? And he says, yeah, he says, I do. I don't know how it happens, but somehow I wake up knowing what he said. Try it. There was one other devotee here that showed me his little tape recorder the other day, a little tiny cassette player that he just plays continuously Srila Prabhupada's japa chanting in the on the continuous tape, and he carries it around in his pocket. So even below all the clutter of material life, you can hear Prabhupada chanting. Our mind is the most difficult, of course. of all the senses to control. But the devotee who surrendered to Krishna uses the mind. And this is the most wonderful of the senses, really, if used properly for Krishna. And in material life, our biggest burden is our mind. When you think about it, anxiety is nothing but a fabrication. Worry and anxiety are artificial abstractions that we create in our minds. Ah, if I don't eat, I'll starve. Oh, if I don't buy this car, I won't be able to get a good job. All of these anxieties we create in our minds. So it is both a blessing and a curse. For materialists, it is a great curse. But it also allows them to understand what the conditions of material life are, and if they so want to get out of them, it also allows them to. By using the mind, they can become a little attracted to Krishna consciousness. Learn just a little bit of the basics of Krishna consciousness and gradually take it up. The mind is a ticket for that. And then once it's engaged in Krishna consciousness, the mind is a wonderful thing. It can create so many wonderful transcendental burdens for us. Prabhupada, he used to like the devotees to take on more than they can do. Much more than they could do. If he felt that they were not taking on enough service, he would assign something. Something huge. He always thought that way. He would never allow anyone to just take this little service and say, well, I'll just do this little bit, this little tiny thing, and hopefully that'll please Srila Prabhupada. As soon as anybody opened their mouth, Srila Prabhupada, I'm thinking about writing a couple of chapters in a small book. You write 5 books, and that would become their service. Or I'm thinking about looking around for a new temple for our devotees who are becoming a little crowded. You find us a palace, would be Prabhupada's burden. And these burdens are wonderful. They're just wonderful. The biggest burden you can imagine as a devotee, you should have it, because this becomes the most pleasurable thing you can imagine after some time. When you become familiar with your burden, even though we're conditioned souls, and materially speaking, we're often afraid of these burdens, Krishna always comes through. There's never a time since time began that Krishna did not come through to help his devotee succeed with carrying this burden. Never. We have dreams. Even dreams can be Krishna conscious. I've had 3 or 4 in my life. I'm not very Krishna conscious. But even advanced devotees, they can dream of Krishna. And certainly our sentiments and our emotions can be, which are great burdens to the materialist. Oh, the emotions of entanglement, of pain and hardship, are great hardship to the materialist, the emotions and the sentiments. This lust and anger, greed, these are manifestations of sentiments and emotions in the material platform. But these emotions can be purified and made unburdensome to the devotee. Prabhupada described in one of his purports that I found the other day, he says there are 2 types of burdens. He said there is the burden of the beast, which is the materialist, and for the devotee there is the burden of love. Love is an emotion. We have the same burden, love as an emotion in the material world. And these common types of love are husband and wife, child to its mother, mother to child, friend to friend, master to disciple, like that. You know, the relationships, the love relationships that human beings have. But for materialists, these are a great burden, for the most part. Ah, I have this wife. I have to support this wife. And at first, when she's young and beautiful and sexy, it's easy. I'm young too. I can make lots of money to support it, so we get a bigger house, better bed, so we can have better sex. But then these things wear off. The age, we get old, we can't work anymore. For the most part, I'm not talking so much about India. India's a little special case, but for the most part, in the rest of the world, all of these man-woman relationships are falling apart. They've become too burdensome to bear in modern society. Even child-mother relationships have become broken down by modern society. The child becomes a burden. The child becomes reckless and out of control. He watches television day and night, eats junk food, and becomes insane. For the most part, this is happening to the youth. Not so much in India yet, but in the outer world. And friends. Who has friends anymore that you can really trust in the material world? People I thought were my best friends in the material world turned out to be my worst enemies. And even teachers, master to disciple relationship. Who can you trust to be your teacher? Who can you trust? What is he going to teach you that will perfect your life? In the material world, you cannot find anyone. So the burden of love is transformed by Krishna consciousness. Just like, because my love is there only for Krishna, all of the things in relationship to Krishna, all of my other responsibilities in relationship with my love for Krishna are automatically enhanced, automatically become burden-free. My love for my wife, my husband, my love for my child, my mother, my father, my love for my friends, my love for my master, all of these things become transformed by your love of Krishna, and they become problem-free. Just see, many devotees have seen Pragosh Prabhu, his family up here in the guest house. What a wonderful family this is. Can you imagine? He has wife and six children. Let's see. Five children. But the oldest one, who's 21, is already married and she has child. So altogether nine of them living in that one room up there. This couldn't happen in the material world. And there's never a moment when there isn't smile and loveliness around their whole family, all the time. It's problem-free. It's a wonderful thing to behold. So family also can become so delightful, Krishna consciousness. They're always helping each other become Krishna conscious. They only do Krishna conscious activities. Pragosh has a very difficult illness. He doesn't know whether he may live another few weeks. But to see him in the hands of his family, he's so happy. And they're helping cure him. They're helping heal him in that way. They're here just for him. So these, in Krishna consciousness, the pleasures, the burdens that we have become actual pleasures. And more burdens that we carry in Krishna consciousness entitles us to more and more pleasure. This is indisputable. And Prabhupada makes even one more distinction. He says that in this description of, there's the burden of beasts, there's the burden of love. He says, but even heavier, and more delightful for the devotee is the burden of separation from the beloved. This is a topic that I'm not very good at talking about, so, and it's a huge subject matter. Maybe we can take it up at some later point. But the burden of separation from one's beloved is thought to be the highest pleasure. Are there any questions or comments that anyone has about this or any other subject? Isn't it clear, though, how Prabhupada has given us something so unique and so wonderful that we don't have these burdens that the materialists carry around like lead weights? Our gratitude is infinite. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.